Well, like craft beer, the wine and spirits industry has really taken off in Wisconsin in the last few years. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We're going to be taking a look at the adult beverage industry a little bit today. Also find out about Wisconsin grapes and how they're doing this year with our guest, Philippe Coquard. Great to have him back. He's the winemaker of the award-winning Wallersheim Winery and Distillery in Prairie du Sac. Philippe is originally from Beaujolais, that region of France, and comes from a winemaking family, and certainly has a winemaking family right now, developed right here in Wisconsin. So we're going to be talking with him about wines and spirits and grapes, and certainly looking forward to questions that you might have. I know in the past he's had people have called in with questions about even raising and growing grapes, and he's always happy to answer those questions as well. You can reach us by phone at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Philippe, welcome back.
Hey, nice to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you back. You know, last year when you were with us, you and other grape growers in Wisconsin had lost a lot of crop due to a late frost.
May 12th. It was the latest frost we had experienced. Thank God this year it didn't happen. But last year was a pretty sad episode. Since then, we have invested into some wind machine that would draw the cold air as it's settling and mixing it up with the upper warm air. It's an expensive proposition, but we didn't want to go through what we went last year. We lost well over 50% of our red grape production. So,
wow.
Affecting the Domaine du Sac, Domaine Reserve, Prairie Sunburst Red, and so on. So, with this new technology, those machines start by themselves when the temperature settles down to 35 degrees Fahrenheit, and it really helped. So,
oh, it really helped. Excellent. Well, probably couldn't do much for the storms and all the rain that we certainly had. How does that going to affect the grapes and fruit?
You know, the storms are the next fear. The storms with breaking shoots, then you can't really do anything about that. The rain, this time of the year, the rain is not affecting the quality of the crop. It's not affecting harvest. August rain would affect the quality, which was another issue we faced last year. August last year was the rainiest month of August in history for our area. So it diluted sugar, diluted quality. So, you know, our way at the winery is very transparent, and 2016 wasn't the best vintage by no stretch of the imagination, because it was diluted and it wasn't a great vintage.
Yeah. Ken in Mayville has a question for you, so let's just go there. Ken, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, bonjour, Philippe. I got a quick question. I've been growing about four different varieties for the last few years. Not necessarily to make wine, although that would be a nice option. But my biggest concern is, how do you tell the best time to pick them? Because right now my main gauge is when the yellow jackets have quickly devoured all my grapes. I know they were perfectly red.
Yeah, and actually there is a very easy gauge. If you can make a note of the bloom, the flower, the flower, which usually happens between June 8th and June 10th, June 14th, you have the beautiful bloom, fully in bloom, and you can smell it. And you put a dot on your calendar about 95 days from that, maximum 100 days from the time of bloom, you will be with a 98% harvest readiness. And that this year the bloom was early, We are already anticipating harvest for the Fauche around August 25th, 28th. It will be, for us, it will be before Labor Day weekend.
Ah, merci. Parfait.
Ouais. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. There are many more distilleries, and now brew pubs, of course, in Wisconsin. Is there a chance the market can become saturated?
It's a joy to see it, but it's also a little bit of a fear. The joy is to see that we went from 20 wineries in the 90s to well over 110 wineries. We all thrive to make the best possible wine, and that growth spurts has happened to every state in the nation. California, Oregon, Washington, Michigan.
Is that right?
Every state in the nation have seen the number of winery quintuple in the last 15 years. So it is great to see a thriving wine industry, but on the other end, we are starting to feel that the consumption and people coming into drinking age is not growing as fast as the output. So there is a lot of shuffling, reshifting, rethinking a little bit what goes on. And it is happening with the microbrew at the moment. It is happening with the winery. The spirits are still very strong. The distilling, the bourbon, the whiskey, the brandy is strong nationwide. There's a shortage of whiskey, so it's a good place to be at the moment. But that's also something we have to watch for the future.
You wonder why there was such a... I mean, I can think about here in Wisconsin, for example. You guys, your folks, your winery has been so successful. I think it probably offered some, hey, they're doing a great job and probably making some money. Why can't we?
Absolutely. And not only in Wisconsin, but I would say nationwide. I mean, you see the success of American wine on the world market is American wines are doing great and are in rivalry with Italian, French, and the rest of the world. And I would say American wines are doing great.
Yeah. Well, Mike in Sun Prairie has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Hey, I've got grapes out back, and they almost never turn out. And I just ran out there this year. There's all kinds of grapes, but there's also a lot of Japanese beetles.
They love grapes.
Actually, you're not the only one. They are everywhere. They are on rose bushes. There is the Japanese beetles will eat the top leaves. And the top leaves are not really the one contributing to photosynthesis. And there are a lot of studies that have proven that you could reduce. I think University of Michigan did this study, and they punched holes in the leaves. And you could lose 50% to almost two-thirds of the leaf area and still having photosynthesis. So, and that is a proven point to say you don't have to kill every bugs out there. However, if they are starting to reach into the big solar captor that is contributing to photosynthesis, then you have to take some action. And the action to be taken is not at 10 a.m. because those bugs are not out there at 10 a.m., but it's between 3 and 5 p.m. that 90% of the population is out. So if you do have to use insecticide and you feel that you are past the threshold of losing more leaf area, then you can spray insecticide between 3 and 5 p.m.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And Darlene and Viola has a question for you. Hi, Darlene.
Hello. Hello, Philippe.
Hey, Darlene. How are you?
Doing well. My little Concord grapes are not very happy with all the rain that we've had. I believe I have anthracnose. Many of the stems have little red marks on them, and the grape berries have black spots, dry black spots. I think it's anthracnose. I think it's a little late for me to treat this year. If not, tell me what I can use organically. If I need to do this preemptively next year, what would you advise that I use?
Well, the first thing you have to do is really open up the canopy. You have to do aggressive hedge trimming at the bottom. You basically should be able to see the grass underneath the vine. Keep the grass mowed. Decrease moisture around the vines, comb the shoots downward, cut the excess shoots a foot off the bottom. I think Concord is copper sensitive. You should read the label. Coside would be would treat a full spectrum of fungus from downy, powdery, black rot, and so on. But you need to check and read the label that Concord might be copper sensitive. So other than that, an ounce of prevention is a pound of cure. And the best thing is to thin the shoots, keep the vines open to the sunlight so they dry out as soon and as fast as possible.
All right. There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, darling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Philippe Cocard, our guest today, Ralph in Sturgeon Bay, has got a good question for us, but we need to take a quick look at the news, weather, and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Philippe is the winemaker at the award-winning Wallersheim Winery in Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin. We'll be back with Philippe right after this look at the news. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here visiting today about our Wisconsin wine and spirits business and growing grapes with our guest Philippe Cocard, who is a winemaker at the award-winning Wallersheim Winery and Distillery in Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin. Great to have him back, and certainly if you have questions or comments for him, maybe it has to do with wine, maybe it has to do with spirits, maybe it has to do with grapes, give a call, 1-800-642-1234. Ralph in Sturgeon, thank you so much for calling.
Hey, you're welcome, Larry. Thanks for the show, and hi, Philippe.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you, and you?
Good, good, good.
Good. My question is simple. I start with an observation. Almost every American brandy I've tasted is syrupy, sweet, and has the wonderful bouquet of wet straw. I'm wondering why American brandy makers, haven't been able to approximate the wonderful cognacs and armagnacs of France.
It's an interesting question, and I don't know the answer. But all I can tell you, it is changing really, really fast. The traditional brand that we know of are cocktail-driven, always to put with something else. And very few have approached the brandy business to have it neat. In a snifter or just with a couple ice cube. And, I can hear my son-in-law, Tom Leonard, the distiller, always talk about everything we do is purposely made for that and intended for that, meaning that the brandy that you talked about, the cognac, the armagnac, and our brandies at the winery, the grapes are intentionally grown for brandy making. The wine is intentionally made for brandy distilling, meaning that it is picked early, no sugar added, high acidity, no sulfite, No malolactic, kept cold and distilled through the winter months as soon as the wine is made. So it is all purpose driven. And from that, it goes into aging a different length of time in barrels that are intended to age brandy. The Coquard brandy is all Wisconsin oak. The Press House brandy is American oak. But it is always with the intention from the very beginning, from the choice of the grapes, where they are grown, how they are grown, when we pick the grapes, how we make the wine, and how we make the brandy. It's purpose-driven. Many of the other brandies available could be made with different wines, red wine, white wine, leftover wine. So that's a different approach. Doesn't mean they are bad. They have a different use than the new direction. And we're not the only one. There is a movement nationwide to make better brandies. We have embraced that since 2009 and 2010, but you will see more and more good American-made brandy cognac style.
Well, until then, vive la France.
You brought along a bottle of your brandy Press House.
Yeah, so the Press House is a new brandy that we introduced last year, I think. The name Press House comes from the old winery building that was called the Press House. We have we have New York State grown grape and Wisconsin grown grape in this brandy, and it is a little bit more affordable than the Coquard brandy. The Coquard brandy is all Wisconsin native grapes, La Crosse and Pepin, La Crescent, so truly Wisconsin hybrids. Grown on Wisconsin soil, Wisconsin terroir, and using Wisconsin oak. And the Press House is great by itself or in cocktail.
Yeah.
And it really fits in the culture of Wisconsin, supper club, old-fashioned, and so on.
Well, I like your Coquard brandy as well in the... In old fashions too, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, absolutely. Same here.
Thank you again for calling, Ralph. And it's not only brandy that you've gotten into here in the last several years.
But... No, we got into gin and absinthe. What's so interesting is that we make everything on site. We don't buy pre-made neutral grain spirit. So we go to the farmer down the road, Philip Marks. He grows all the wheat for us. So we get the wheat from his farm grown specifically for the distillery. Meal the wheat, make a wheat beer, distill the wheat into a neutral spirit. So it does have a little bit of a sweeter wheat aroma. Mm-hmm. Then we use all Wisconsin botanical except for the little bit of juniper berry going into the gin. Same with the absinthe. Wormwood, lavender, coriander, lemongrass. It's all grown within 20 miles of the distillery. And most of it is grown on the Baraboo Bluff by Jane at Four Elements. So
yeah.
It's all, we mean local, we talk local, we apply local. So.
Yeah, for sure. And you put up a silo.
Yeah, we did put a silo so we can receive a bigger shipment rather than dealing with a few plastic pallet-sized boxes that are a few thousand pounds. Now you basically can bring a full trailer or two from the farm. So Joe Keller grows all the yellow corn for us, and Philip Marks down the road grows all the other grain, the rye for the rye whiskey, the white corn for the bourbon, and the wheat for the neutral spirit. So they can bring a couple big trailer load, and it fits in the silo. So it's nice to have it right on site.
Oh, absolutely. Eric in Stevens Point, we'll go to you next. Eric, hi. Thanks for calling.
You bet. thanks very much for the program. I enjoy it immensely. I have a rather esoteric question for you, Philippe. I'm kind of experimenting with about 14 different varieties of grapes. I've got about 65 plants or so. And about 2 weeks ago, had an infestation with rose chafer. And we're here in central Wisconsin with sandy soil, so it's a real issue. I was leaving, so I quickly sprayed the orchard with perithrin, which is organic pesticide. And when I returned a week later, one variety in particular, the Frontenacs, had a bunch of dead leaves on them. The fruit appeared to be dying as well. The tips of the growth are still alive, but I'm wondering, was that the effect of the pyrethrin? I've never read anything about that. And I also wonder, is there anything I should do to ameliorate this or help the vines along in terms of surviving?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there is something going on we've never witnessed either at the winery. You know, we had so much rain in May. And it was cool and it got cold. And then we had 3 weeks of really intense heat, 90 degree and dry and so on. And we've seen some vine, especially St. Pepin vine, turn completely yellow. And, I mean, I went to my dad, who has 67 years of grape growing consulting, and sent some picture and looked at what was going on, and the vine really thought it was in a drought stress, so it reacted and it turned yellow. So there's a lot of that stuff going on. As far as your case, it could be something like this. I doubt that the insecticide did anything unless it could have got sunburn, and you really have to pick your time to apply spray that it is not 90 degrees Fahrenheit at 5 o'clock in the afternoon where you could do some burning. Because if the tip of the shoots are growing again and still alive, something happened on the lower extremities of the vine. You know, I think what we can't stress enough, and we have six crew member staff helping and doing that every day in the vineyard, is combing the vine, organizing the shoots, discarding the shoot, thinning the shoots that don't have fruit, hedge trimming. Keeping the vine open is half of the battle.
Yes. And you mentioned that you had these leaves turning yellow. These are actually dying. Portions of the leaves are dying. So your reference to a sunburning thing might be really true. Do you find and do you know whether Frontenac is more susceptible or more sensitive to that kind of thing?
You know, we do have Frontenac on site, and it looks fine right now. The St. Pepin is the one that we've experienced that yellowing but you know, sunburning, going from 3 weeks of cool to 2 months of cool to 3 weeks of heat and sun, the vines, it was an adjustment for that. So from our experience, Frontenac is tough. But I would say be careful with the timing of application so you don't exaggerate a sunburn.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Eric. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Jeremy emailed to say he really enjoys the show when you're on and asks, you know, how happy you are with the current growth of Wisconsin vineyards. We talked a little about that. Do you think it will reach a point in the future where the wine in Wisconsin is made with a higher percentage of Wisconsin-grown grapes?
And you know, it is every winery's goal to use more and more Wisconsin-grown fruit. And we have a core group of grape growers that we have developed relationship with. They are growing a lot of Wisconsin-grown fruit, being Foch, Marquette, and a lot of the brandy grapes. I mean, you're talking hundreds of tons of grape coming to the winery. But again, it's developing that working relationship, specific grower for specific wineries. Key, it's all part of education, and we've done that for 45 years. You know, people walk to a winery and everybody expect a California style Cab or Merlot or Pinot Noir. Well, we need to remind everybody that Frontenac or Foch or Marquette or La Crescent or St. Croix or Petite Pearl, those new varietals, are not going to taste like a Cab or Merlot. And to me, it's the beauty of diversification. In France, you have Gamay, you have Pinot, you have so many different wine regions. Well, that's why a Wisconsin red, a Wisconsin white will have its own identity, its own style. And actually, it's interesting. This morning, I tasted fresh out of the barrel a new Campus Craft Red that is going to be released in September for UW Campus, and it doesn't taste like a Cab or a Merlot. It is a Midwest Wisconsin style red, a little bit more acidic, maybe not as soft and big, but its own style. Yeah. And that's what we have to welcome. It's a great wine. It's an awesome wine, and it fits where it's grown and where it's made, and it should have its own identity. You know, I get tired of all the big Cab and all the big reds. Yeah, they have their place, but create or leave us our own style as well.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I have there are more callers online, but I wanted to mention that you have brought a bottle of your dry rosé, which is the prettiest color wine. This is just a beautiful.
It's interesting how rosé wine are just coming in full force. It's the new Pinot Grigio, the new Chardonnay. Everybody wants a rosé, and the trend is bone dry, no sweetness, no residual sweetness, low enough alcohol, 11-ish%, 12 at most, and nice and crisp. Afternoon in the shade, enjoying a glass of rosé wine.
Well, it's a pretty color. That sort of...
It tastes even better.
Well, rosé. I guess it tastes even better. Oh, that's good, too. Oh, man. Let's go to Patty in Eau Claire next. Patty, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a couple questions. One is a very general question. If you could speak about port. I love
port.
Port. It's hard to find in my local stores, and I'd like your thoughts on it. And then secondly, I have some grape plants that last year I pruned back way back because the leaves have these bumps on them that I'm not sure if there's bugs inside of these little bumps or if it's some kind of a fungus. But I pruned it back, and I took all those bad leaves and threw them away from the grapevines. But I don't know what they are.
Okay, two very easy answer. Port wine is awesome. It's one of my favorite drink. Port originally came from Portugal. It is one of the oldest appellation in the world, where appellation means that they had to obey to some regulation, what could be grown, how it could be made, and so on. So port appellation goes back to 1776 or something like this. Port wine is a fortified wine with grape spirit. So during the fermentation, we add grape spirit, unaged grape brandy, at a very specific point to stop the fermentation, increase the alcohol content to around 20%, so it has natural sweetness, natural sugar from the grapes, higher alcohol because we add some during the fermentation. It kills the yeast, and it is that simple, quote-unquote. no sulfite, one gentle filtration, and it ages in the barrel. Our port ages 13 months in the barrel, and we have a tawny port that will age 5 years in the barrel. And the tawny port is the ultimate ultimate drink to have. And you're right, there are not a lot of ports on the shelves. You will find few Portuguese port, few California port. And what we hear a lot from a customer is that they don't like the syrupy, sweet port. And ours is doing quite well. So it's a beautiful, striking bottle with a lady in a red dress dancing on the bottle. You can't miss that if you see it around.
Yeah,
The little bumps on the vines. The little bumps on the vine. That is phylloxera. That is an aphid. It's an aphid that it really does not hurt the leaves. It doesn't look nice, but it's hurting the roots, and it's feeding on the roots. However, the American vines are not sensitive to the damage on the roots. So removing those leaves is good, but ultimately you will have to spray soon as you see those little bumps with a systemic insecticide. The standard insecticide known as 7 contact insecticide will not kill. So it is a more, a quote-unquote, dangerous approved chemical that you have to use, and talk to your extension agent, talk to a local garden supply with something to kill aphids from the inside of the vine.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to mention you guys have got some patio wine flight tastings. You've got a cocktail hour kind of thing going on.
Trying new things, catering to a new customer, different customer, trying to take the tasting a little bit closer to the vineyard in the patio. It's really nice. It's more relaxing, and you are sitting down, and our well-trained tour guide are presenting the wine and suggesting how they should be enjoyed. And then within, I think, the next few weeks, we will be starting a vineyard tour. Guided vineyard tour, as well as a historical tour, talking about the history of the winery going back to 1847 and all the different phases of the history of the building and the winery.
All of your events and information is up on your website, and the website. I'm pretty sure we have it up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. But what is the website again?
Wollersheim.com.
So it's Wollersheim.com, and those patio wine tastings sounded like a lot of fun to me.
They are extremely popular, and they are booked. they are booking really fast.
Fast. Well, as always, it's really a lot of fun to have you on and to talk with you, Philippe. And we didn't get to everybody, but that's kind of the way it always works. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Larry. Always fun.
Appreciate it very much. Philippe Coquart, a winemaker at the award-winning Wollersheim Winery and Distillery in Prairie du Sac, originally from the Beaujolais region of France. He comes from a winemaking family, and he certainly has a wonderful winemaking family right here in Wisconsin. Always fun to talk with him, and we'll have him back, and we'll do this again and talk with him some more. So just to take a look ahead at tomorrow's show, we're going to be taking a look at getting the most out of retirement with an author. And then another author's on to talk about how to downsize as we develop a lot of stuff and a lot of things, and how to do it properly. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.